Hey everyone, welcome to Neighbor Science. I am Ryan Salisbury.
And I am Peter.
I'm still not getting these singing intros right. Like nothing, I'm not feeling anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we need like a youth choir to sing you in.
I actually really like that idea, but I'm very nervous about going anywhere near youth and asking them to participate in this online thing that we do. Okay, so like Ryan said, hey everyone. Today we're going to be talking about things that lots of adults really, 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 really love. And
free speech.
No. We're talking about anime, which is much better than free speech, I think.
Oh, I thought we were talking about how Owen Benjamin got unjustly banned from Twitter for saying the N-word for like 5 years. Oh, he's this terrible conservative comedian who got banned from Twitter a couple days ago and is like making a huge deal about it.
Oh, yeah. I remember you posted on Twitter saying, wait, this guy's a professional comedian?
Yes, that guy. Yeah.
That guy.
Like his big joke that like made everyone in his town hate him was like something that he stole from 4chan from like 2000. So that's cool.
4chan, the website that gave you pedo bear.
Yeah, and N-word stole my bike, which is the joke that he stole. The worst thing is like he has a 2-year-old and his wife is pregnant. And he's like, these fucking online leftists have taken away my livelihood. And everyone's like, dude, just get a fucking job.
all those leftists can go and work as a barista. Why can't you?
the one situation that will make online socialists unironically say, dude, just get a job. When you get banned from Twitter for talking about child's pubes.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that anyone who considers themselves a Twitter comedian should be able to lay claim to the job title of comedian.
Yeah. I mean, he does stand up. It's really bad. But like that's why he's like not just ostracized from like the internet, because he does have his fans on the internet. You know, he's just like banned from Twitter, and I think he's banned from Facebook too now. Or YouTube. I can't remember which one. But that the 4chan stolen joke thing, like he told that at a show in his hometown and like everyone hates him now. And he's like,
fair enough.
He's like, oh, the cultural Marxists have like taken over. You can't even tell a fucking joke anymore without people being offended.
Yeah, dude, but you couldn't tell a joke to begin with, so nothing's really changed.
Why can't we go back to when we had free speech, like, you know, the era where if you said anything that vaguely sounded communist, you would get arrested? Should go back to the free speech era like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know things are getting bad when you miss the Red Scare era.
Yeah.
Okay,
We're very on track already.
Yeah. I told you we have to change the name of the show to... wait, are we on track? I've forgotten what we're talking about. Okay, so what we're talking about today is a show that, according to the internet, although I'm never 100% sure if I can believe the internet, it's one of my favorite animes, even though I don't watch as much anime as most of you millennials. Stupid millennials with all your...
I don't know if it's a millennial thing, you know.
Dude, it's totally a leftist millennial thing.
I got bad news for you, buddy. There's a lot of Nazis that love anime.
Yeah, no, okay, fair enough. You millennials can't seem to get a coherent ideology together that you can all agree on. unlike the boomers who you know, at least they all can agree on hating millennials. What we're talking about today is My Hero Academia, also known as Boku no Hero Academia.
Yeah, we'll just abbreviate it as Hiroaka.
Hiroaka.
Very long.
Yeah. I might actually call it MHA every now and then.
Cause... MHA is easier to write, but I think Hiroaka is easier to say.
Fair enough. I'm not going to argue the point because abbreviations. Because
you're not as dedicated as me. We get it.
No. Yeah, yeah. This is it. I love the show because it's a ton of fun. And I like the superhero side of things as our dedicated listeners.
See, I thought you were saying you love the show as in the show that we're doing right now, that we're making. But if you don't love it, that's fine. You know, I guess I'm alone in that regard.
Ryan, I've just never said that I love the show because there are no words to describe how much I love the show. I mean, come
Good
on.
Save.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Excuse me, I'm married. I know how to save things. Except files on Word, which I lose constantly because I don't fucking remember to save. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about My Hero Academia, and we've got a couple of interesting takes that you are unlikely to hear from other analyses of the show.
Yeah, fucking YouTubers.
Fucking
don't
YouTubers.
Know what they're talking about.
Although, one of the analyses that I watched in order to frame my analysis properly, which I then...
word to use instead of steal.
Oh, no, I didn't steal anything. I very specifically wrote my own words, paraphrasing what someone else said. and that's not theft. That's poetic license, I think.
It's meta-analysis.
That's it. I'm analyzing analyses, several
yeah,
of them.
Exactly.
And I'm pointing out, and I'm doing this without referring to them at all.
Got to look at other ideas to determine what the truth is, you know?
Exactly. I'm not here to just speak my truth, even though my truth is the only truth. Yeah.
Yeah, I did something similar. I wrote my thing and then like looked up some other ones, although I think I only found one. But maybe I just didn't do a lot of work.
I watched like five different analyses and read a whole bunch of blogs and looked at various character analyses and whatnot. Like,
were there a lot of actually different takes, or was it all like pretty similar?
Look, I saw something similar to your take. I saw something similar to my take. I saw a whole bunch of them that are very superficial, of just fanboys going, "Oh my god, I love it so much."
Yeah, I love the analysis that's just like describing the plot. That's really cool.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is such a recipe.
Did I link you to that One Punch Man review that was just like, "The show is bad because the fights were not good"?
No, I think that was One Piece. Review that you linked me
no,
to.
No, it was One Punch Man.
Oh, was it?
I might have linked you a One Piece review, but yeah, no, there was a One Punch Man review that was literally like, "This show is bad because the fights aren't good and because there's only one joke, which is that Saitama is super powerful." It's like,
oh my god. Oh my
god. Did you watch the entire first episode even? Like,
like everything in that show is comedy and comedic genius. Okay, so what we're going to be doing today is not just looking at the basic story of My Hero Academia, but also analyzing it from a political economy kind of reference frame.
Looking for politics in anything that we see or hear or read.
On that note, I just want to say that I'm extremely fucking upset at Taylor Swift.
Oh?
Yeah. It's not 100% her fault. I think racism might also be at play here. But the Deadpool animated series has been cancelled. And one of the episodes they did made a lot of fun of Taylor Swift. And apparently it's been pulled and they've cancelled the series. And I'm fucking upset. And I for lack of having anyone else that I can rationally blame, I'm blaming it all on Taylor Swift. I will never fucking... ever tolerate anyone listening to her music around me.
Okay, first of all, I had no idea that there was a Deadpool animated series. Second of all, well,
it was still in the works.
Oh, okay. Second of all, Taylor Swift is a POC, so it can't be racism, unless it's racism from the Deadpool writers. Because
wait, she's a bae. What? I'm sorry. My head is still stuck at you saying.
I guarantee you that take exists on Twitter. 100%. Someone has made the argument that Taylor Swift is POC. Oh my God. I've been wanting to do that as a segment for a while. Like, if we have, like, next week when we do, you know, newsy, like, casual one, let's do this as a segment. I bet this take exists. So come up with some really stupid takes that you think someone has written, and then we'll see if it exists on, like, Twitter or the blogosphere.
That's a really good segment.
Yeah.
For the listeners listening right now, if you agree with Ryan, let us know on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or go and make some really fucking outrageous takes, and we'll see if we can match anything as outrageous as you do. go ahead and give us the hashtag #NeighborScienceOutrageousTakes. All one word, please.
All right, so how the fuck do we get on Taylor Swift? Jesus Christ, man.
Okay, let's go back to
My Hero Academia, the thing that we're talking about today.
Okay, so first up, we're going to take Ryan's take, and then we're going to take my better, hotter, like, super luminous galaxy brain take.
All right, so maybe I should talk about the story a little bit first, because not everyone has seen it, just, you know, it's pretty new.
Let's just explain it first.
Yeah, so My Hero Academia is kind of the new Naruto. It's kind of filled the void that has been left by Boruto, which I haven't even watched because apparently it's really bad. And so I will never watch it because Naruto is so good and I don't want to ruin it. And it's about, it's kind of like a Japanese take on Western superheroes. So in the setting, superhero powers are something that 80% of the population is born with. Some are more powerful than others. For obvious reasons, because everyone's power is different. So some powers are like the main character's mom can like pull objects towards her, but it's like extremely slow. Like she has to keep moving her hand and stuff. And then some are like, you can, generate explosions from your sweat. So obviously, there's some differences in the powers there. And so they've kind of built this world where, superheroes are everywhere, and so it's kind of an interesting look at how the world would be if that were the case. And the actual story of the show is that a boy who was born without superpowers, who is what, 10 or 20% of the population, something like that, he wants nothing more than to be a hero, and in a chance encounter with the hero that he's been looking up to his entire life, he finds out that he can actually get superpowers, and so he becomes a hero and enrolls in like the number one academy for hero training. So that's the basic story, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, I've got nothing to add as a plot summary. That was pretty good. Did you just read that off Wikipedia?
No. And I think it didn't include many spoilers. It includes one, but I think it's pretty obvious that it's going to happen. You know, it's still okay to watch. So my take on it. I love this show. I think it's really fun to watch. It definitely is like a show for boys because it's pretty male gazey and stuff like that. The female characters are not too great. And much as I love it, I think it's deeply fascist. So as I alluded to earlier, superheroes are genetically superior to humans, and there is a hierarchy of power within the heroes themselves. Ordinary humans, like the main character, are relentlessly bullied, rendering them subhuman. And this situation is never really questioned or dealt with. The only reason that Midoriya, the main character, overcomes the bullying is because he's actually granted powers. So, like, if if he never like encountered All Might and gained his superpowers, he probably would have just been bullied his entire life until he like kind of fell into some role for, you know, quirkless people.
Just for our listeners that haven't seen the show, when we say quirk, quirk is what the show refers to the superpowers as.
Yeah.
People have quirks, and those who don't have them are fucking muggles.
Yeah. So the protagonist of the story is a subhuman who becomes the greatest superhuman by being granted power by the state, who is represented by the hero All Might, and through relentless and gruesome personal sacrifice. So another related point for it being fascist is that in the first episode or two, they describe like how society was when quirks emerged, and they kind of elaborate on it later. So they say that quirks were originally used for crime. So like the first people to gain superpowers, they used those powers to commit crimes and like, you know, steal and stuff like that, until like morally upstanding quirk users started fighting crime. And this is similar to Western superheroes, where, you know, superheroes emerged as a way to deal with crime, not necessarily superpowered crime, but they were like a reaction to crime. And then contrast with One Punch Man, where heroes are seemingly eternal and there's no apparent causation one way or the other. So it's there's no clear beginning, like whether it's supervillains or superheroes that were there first. So superheroes in Hiroaka and in Western canon are extensions of the state. This is really supported in the show by the fact that there's this like incredibly large bureaucracy around superheroes and, you know, institutional support, like in this form of the Hero Academy. I'm forgetting its name now. Oh, UA. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
So underlying this whole view, the quirks being initially used for crime and, you know, heroes rising in reaction to it and then becoming part of the state, is the idea that humans are naturally evil and that the state society arose as a moral response to the evil of, I guess, primitive humans or, you know, innate human evil. So unlike Western superheroes, heroes in My Hero Academia are thoroughly integrated with bureaucracy. They're regulated by the government, and they're actually made into businesses, which is, I think, a unique take from the Western version of superheroes.
No, the only exception to that that I can really think of offhand are Iron Man and what's the big superhero who turns out to be the main villain in Watchmen?
Ozymandias,
who is a multi-billionaire, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, I mean, Watchmen overall is very exceptional in terms of how superheroes are portrayed, I think.
Agreed. Very humanized.
Yeah, yeah. So like in, you know, in Western canon, it would be like unconscionable for a superhero to like derive financial benefit from their position as a superhero, but in the universe of Hiroaka, it's viewed as like a necessary part of being a superhero, to the point where like during a hero tournament, there was actually like business school students that were there like talking about how to market each hero. It was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and then later on, when the students all go for their internships with various
hero agencies.
Registered professional heroes. Part of the training that some of the students receive is how to do public relations, and how important it is. I mean, the two of the female heroes who are actually like if they were if the characters were very strongly developed in the Wonder Woman sense, these would be insanely powerful characters. But in the show, they're sort of depicted as these
kind of weak little girls.
Yeah, weak little girls, and they should capitalize on their looks. And
yep.
I mean, the one hero, they have two female heroes on a talk show who end up arguing about what was it they argued about?
I actually don't remember this part.
It started off the one episode, and the one female hero, professional hero, she's the reason why a dress code was instituted for the superheroes, because her outfits were too revealing. And
oh, are you talking about Midnight?
Might be the
R-rated hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's kind of sexist, I do love that joke. It's really funny. R-rated hero. Pretty good. Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I get that there's a sort of subversive kind of feminist almost message as to the depiction of female superheroes. And the fact that they're almost always scantily or sexily clad.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But are they making a statement, or are they playing on the trope?
So I think they're playing on the trope, because I was actually thinking about this, like, specifically with – well, I'll get into this later. I'm going to finish the fascist thing.
But we'll circle back to this. Before we segue again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so superheroes are made into businesses. Even during the UA Sports Festival, heroes are competing with one another to be recruited by hero agencies, sort of like startups at a tech expo compete for venture capital. Schools other than UA do not allow students to use their quirks in physical exams. Eraserhead, who's the teacher of the main characters, claims that this is to protect the idea that all men are created equal, which he sees as irrational. So they kind of explicitly point out that, like,
superheroes are superior.
Yeah, that men are not equal anymore because of quirks, and so it's irrational to uphold these liberal principles, which, you know, of course, the idea behind all men are created equal is that you know, we should all be socially equal, not that we're literally equal. But
Ryan, cool. You and I are exactly the same people.
And so, I mean, also there's the fact that the people who wrote that own slaves. So we'll not harp on that too much. To finish this off, All Might is the apex hero, but his power was granted to him unlike every other hero. He stands as a symbol for justice in the world, and the meaning of justice in this case reflects the values of state society. And he's grooming Midoriya to be the next apex hero. Even though his power comes from others, he's portrayed publicly as a natural-born hero. And the stated reason for this is that if the public knew that he was granted his power, then it would cause damage to society. So the myth that all power is you know, innate, and that the most powerful hero is a natural born hero, has to be upheld at all costs, or else the society would break down, because it's fascist.
Agreed.
Let's see. I think I had a couple other things in here. Who's Tomura? I don't remember that name. He's the villain guy. He says, when it comes down to it, laws and rules assume that individuals have morals. They're convinced there's no way anyone would use their powers against others. So one of the villains is basically saying that, like, the only reason that everyone isn't killing each other right now is because of the state and the power of the state enforcing rules that it has come up with, because only states are moral. Human individuals are not moral themselves.
It is an interesting take.
Yeah. But he is a villain, so maybe that view is supposed to be the incorrect view. But I don't know. I think the rest of my argument kind of holds it up.
Okay, so that's Ryan's take, is that My Hero Academia is essentially fascist. I've got a slightly different take. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the series because I think it sort of represents the journey of the little guy that is able to possibly change the system in the long run by eventually making his way to the top. But when watching the full show, before I watched any of the analyses or whatever, I couldn't help but shake the feeling that what I'm actually watching is the journey of a former peasant in a feudal society as he travels up the hierarchy to eventually be crowned king, which is essentially the position currently being held by All Might. Now,
when I read this, I looked like that that gif of the black dude who's like stroking his chin with his mouth agape with like the camera circling him.
I can actually picture that. Okay, so in my opinion, the hierarchy in this feudal system is established by birthright, which is like how most feudal systems work. And the status within the hierarchy is determined by power levels of the given quirk, as well as the prowess at utilizing the quirk. So it's not enough to just be born into nobility. You also have to be able to play the power game.
Yeah.
You have to play the game of houses, as it used to be called.
Bakugo is supposed to be like the most powerful main character, like unequivocally, at least at first, until like Todoroki shows up more. But they, like, everyone keeps pointing out how he'll never be a good hero because he's such like a fucking hot-headed asshole that everyone hates. And so, like, even though he's super powerful, like, he won't be a good hero. He'll just be really powerful.
At the end of the day, the direction he's going in by the end of season two sort of means he's going to end up a lot like Todoroki's dad.
Yeah, I think they're a good mirror. All Might has all of the power and all of the charisma that's needed, whereas Endeavor, Todoroki's dad, has all of the power and none of the charisma, and nobody likes him, and so he's number two.
Exactly. So it's not enough to just be noble, nobility born. You also have to be able to utilize your quirk in such a way that society will accept you. And part of that is learning the business skills of PR and so on and so forth. But this is a lot like feudal systems used to be, the way monarchs used to run their various kingdoms.
Yeah, no one likes a Henry the 14th.
Exactly. At the end of the day, the king that just rules like a despot is hated by the peasantry and eventually overthrown, or taxes aren't paid, so on and so forth. And it becomes difficult to run their kingdom. Now, much like traditional feudal systems, the head of the hierarchy is not subject to the same meritocracy as the rest of the hierarchy. Instead, the position is passed down from one generation to the next. In monarchism and old feudal systems, the way that you could improve your status meant that you could go from being a lord to a duke to you could change where you sat on the hierarchy, whereas the king is the king, and that gets passed down to his child or his heir, regardless of whether or not the family is ultimately suited to it.
You know what I just thought of that actually bolsters this argument? Little bit of a spoiler here, but when powers first emerged, instead of the like bureaucratic state that currently exists being the overarching ruler, it was a supervillain named One for All, who had a power where he could steal others' powers.
It's the other way around. It's called All for One is the bad guy.
All for One, yeah, sorry. And so, like, he rose to power by stealing power from others exactly the same way as states initially formed by stealing power from others, by enslaving them. And One for All, the power that All Might has that's passed down, was actually created by All for One. By accident, it was a combination of his power and someone else's power that who they thought was Quirkless. So he created the monarchy and the succession of the monarchy.
Exactly.
And now he's trying to take it back.
So in much the same way as we can look at the global oligarchy today as being a derivative of the monarchies that that preceded them, and now we have, air quotes, democracy. I think the parallels are quite striking.
Yeah.
Sorry, where was I? I was talking about, now obviously Deku has, Deku is the main character. It's like,
yeah,
a
Midoriya,
nickname.
Deku,
And I call him Deku because I, eventually that's going to be his superhero name. They've set that up throughout the show. And I like the name. I think it's cool. It's basically the kids used to bully him and mock him by calling him Deku, and now he's going to make that his superhero name, and it's kind of like owning the weakness that people identified in you.
I had to read a lot about that to get to like understand that whole thing. So basically, like Midoriya's first name. Like, names in Japanese are written in kanji, and kanji can usually be read more than one way. Midoriya's first name, I can't remember what it is offhand. Maybe you can look it up while I'm talking. It can also be read as Deku, and Deku kind of means blockhead or, like, useless person. But it also can mean, like, someone who strives... or something like that. Like, Japanese is a very contextual language, and so, like, words have multiple meanings depending on the context they're used. And so in one context, Deku is an insult, but in another context, Deku is kind of like, you know, a person who is maybe ordinary, but tries really hard and, inspires others or something like that. And so that's kind of like what the idea behind his name is supposed to be.
Okay, so his first name is Izuku.
Izuku, yeah. I knew it was Iz something, but I was like, Izanagi? Izanagi? No, that's a power from Naruto.
Okay, Deku obviously has to work to become the next All Might, but it's almost a foregone conclusion that when he's ready, he will take up the mantle of king of the superheroes as such. And now what makes this interesting for me is that the Chosen One seems to be specifically from humble beginnings. All Might, at some point he explains that, he sees so much of himself in Deku, and that's one of the reasons why he chose him to be his successor. And it's later revealed, when Deku's on an internship, it's revealed that All Might's, he was originally from almost exactly the same kind of background as Deku. So, it's very interesting that they both come from humble beginnings, and they are not derived from the regular aristocracy. So both Deku and All Might become heroes because they involuntarily jumped into the fray while they had no means to make any significant difference. And All Might actually realizes that Deku is a hero because of this moment very early on in the first season. Because it happens early on, I'm not even going to call it a spoiler. So there's this pauper to prince story that happens.
There's also the interesting aspect of, like, again, I mean, this whole thing is laden with spoilers, so just assume that there's going to be spoilers in here. the previous user of One for All was killed, I think, by All for One. And so there was, like, this power void of there not being someone with One for All while All Might was in training. Mm. And his training had to be taken over by Gran Torino.
Okay. So for me, this all suggests that what sets Deku and All Might apart is not that the fact that they were quirkless to begin with, but that their heroism is innate. For them, it's a calling that they couldn't avoid even if they wanted to. In much the same way as kings in monarchism, they didn't always want to be king. It's not the most desirable position. There's a lot of pomp and ceremony and restrictions placed on a monarch within monarchism. The aristocracy as a whole tends to benefit from the system, but the king themselves, even though they are the ultimate power in the land, their powers are very limited by the system itself, and they tend to be played as puppets. So it makes sense for me that Deku and All Might come from non-aristocracy and are essentially put into this position that they think they want, because it provides them the means to help and be the ultimate hero and number one superhero, blah, blah, blah. But it's not something that they can avoid. It's not something that it's not something they actually have a choice in. This is not of their choosing. It's something that was always going to happen. And there's a kind of fatalism in this for me. I know this might seem like it's going a little bit off track of my feudalism take, but it does tie in for me with the head of a monarchy not being able to wield power necessarily the way they want. At the end of the day, a good king, good, again, air quotes, is one who doesn't simply tyrannically wield power as they see fit, but one who tries to the best of their ability to see to the needs of their people, their population. What's the right word? And so the only way that you can become the number one hero is by dedicating yourself to always having the smile on your face while rescuing people. And there's all these various public relations style tropes that are infused into these heroes that are trying to become king of the heroes.
That just made me realize something. This is going to be off track, but not, I don't think it's going to be too far off track. But like, monarchy kind of makes sense in a way. I mean, if you think about it as a system intentionally made to manage power, it makes a lot of sense. You have this line of succession where the king's son will naturally, like, be exposed to all of the conflicts and methods and such that you need to manage power effectively. So to wield power without causing rebellion or without, you know, getting overtaken by people that are trying to take the power away from you. And so basically the son or daughter of the king is best positioned to learn the art of managing power. And the great innovation of capitalism is capitalization and dynamic hierarchy. And what that did was it turned power management from an art into a science through finance.
Mm.
Yeah, that's just something that you made me think of.
Yeah, and I would go so far as to say that that actually ties into the show, because here it's not about hereditary power. Todoroki is the son of Endeavor, who is the number two hero, but he rejects his father. And because of that rejection, he only uses half his power most of the time. There are times when he uses the fire side of himself. But he's not learning how to use power in the same way that his father would have used power. He does go to intern. He does do his internship at his father's superhero company. But he's not doing it so that he can learn to wield power the way that his father does. He goes there to learn the art of heroing the way. So it does take on this capitalist bent rather than the traditional feudal bent in that sense. So I think this is where your fascist theory comes in a little bit stronger and my feudalist theory starts to fall by the wayside.
But at the same time, with the feudalist thing and Todoroki, Todoroki was actually born through a what was it called, a quirk marriage?
Mm.
Quirk marriage. And so Endeavor married a woman based on her quirk alone in order to further the power of his own lineage, and that's exactly something that would happen in feudalism, where political marriages. I mean, that still happens today, for sure.
Very much so.
But
Very much so.
It's way less common. So, like, you have, Zuckerberg married just a regular doctor, not like a billionaire. Bill Gates, I believe, married. She's not like an heiress or anything crazy like that. She's just like a regular person. I actually wouldn't mind doing an episode,
an episode on this where we can go and do our research and take a look at how power lineages are still at play in society today, whether they're prevalent.
Yeah, that would be
not.
Good because I always cite this study because people who like to talk about social mobility being like high tend to use pretty much the worst type of study, which is like intra-generational mobility. So like the difference between your income when you're like 20 and your income when you're like 50 personally, which is like the stupidest form of type of study for social mobility, because it's essentially meaningless. It's saying like, yeah, as you get older, your income goes up. Duh. We all know that. But there's a study that I cite all the time in those kind of conversations where they looked at rare surnames, which, you know, because surnames are passed down through marriages generally, finding one that's rare is a really good way to establish like a lineage, like a family lineage. And so they looked at the income and wealth of people with certain rare surnames, and they found that social mobility is so low that like people who were rich 1,300 years ago are in essentially the same position now.
Mm.
So pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be a good topic to cover.
Good topic to do later on in the season.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the fascist take and the feudalist take. I wanted to talk a little bit about All Might as a symbol of peace.
Okay.
Now, throughout the two seasons that have aired so far, All Might is very specifically, he says so himself, several other people say it. You mentioned it earlier in your fascist thing. He is essentially the
he's Superman.
he is a version of Superman, essentially.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a symbol of peace, but throughout the series, a lot of blood is shed in the name of his peace. whether it's because villains like Stain idolize him and think all other heroes are inferior, or because villains like One for All see him as the only real threat which must be destroyed at all costs. The fact is that All Might's power is the crux of most of the chaos throughout the series. As a symbol of peace, he must be destroyed by the villains, and conversely, as a symbol of peace, he must be propped up by the hero hierarchy. Even when he fails to live up to the height due to his inability to sustain his power because of the injuries that he has sustained. So at one point, the villain Shigaraki, he articulates this very well when he's struggling to find his motivation, and he confronts Deku at the mall. And in a
this
talk
is the
with
guy
Deku,
I mentioned earlier, by the way, Tomura Shigaraki. Yeah.
So when he confronts Deku at the mall, the talk that he has with Deku galvanizes his hatred of All Might, because he realizes that it is All Might's position as the symbol of peace, which then allows society to carry on with their lives peacefully. The Hero Academy also uses this as their reasoning for holding the festival so soon after the attack by the League of Villains on UA, saying that it would symbolize the defeat of the villains and therefore allay the fears of the people. So while each of the individual heroes is taught this PR strategy in running heroism as a business, the main hero, or the number one hero, is held up as a symbol of peace because that's good PR.
Yeah, I think when they say symbol of peace, they really just mean symbol of
power.
You know, power, like the order that the state brings. They talk about this on Citations Needed, which is another podcast. They talk about media and the use of language in media. It's really good, and they always talk about how peace always means just an end to violent conflict, in the sense that there is a rebellion from people who are treated unjustly, and the way that we need to solve that is by stopping them from committing violence and just having them submit to whatever form of oppression it is that they're experiencing. Like they talk about this a lot when they bring up coverage of Israel, and how peace talks inevitably just mean Hamas needs to stop fighting the IDF and just give up, and that's how we need to achieve peace. So All Might is a symbol of peace in sort of the same way. Like, it doesn't matter what's happening to you. You need to just respect the order that the hero society brings, and stop doing crime, even if, you know, it's caused by Shigaraki's motivations are that he was like in trouble as a child, like his parents were killed or something like that, and he cried for hours, and like everyone just walked by kind of assuming that some hero would save him or something like that. Kind of the same origin as what's his name from Watchmen? Rorschach. Yeah, kind of similar, but Rorschach became an anti-hero instead of a villain. I don't remember how I got onto this.
I do. I actually think it ties in very nicely, because one of the analyses that I watched, and I very much agree with this, is that the villains in the show are literally the antithesis of the heroes, and by this, I mean the class system that exists within this My Hero Academia universe. Mm-hmm. Whereas your superheroes have become, the quirky people are the ones that get to run society. It's not the quirkless that are the lower class of society. It's actually the villains. The villains are the ones that don't respect this fascist rule of law. they don't respect the systems of power that are currently entrenched. Stain, also known as the Hero Killer, he's not doing what he does because he hates the quirkless, or because he hates
loves doing crimes.
No, he's doing what he does specifically because he sees heroes and what heroism has become as a corruption of the stated values. It's not, as far as he's concerned, the only hero that is living up to the name of hero is All Might. So this kind of ties back in, because if the oppressed class is this minority of villains within a fascist state, I'm sorry, but the villains are anarchists. a lot of them are very...
I was actually just about to say, I think Stain is kind of a market anarchist, because he sees the all of the business aspects of heroes as a corruption of what being a hero should be, which is just mutual aid without any financial benefit attached to it.
Exactly. And then you've got your very ANCAP Shigaraki, who basically just thinks that it should all be a free-for-all. So while they are, I will go so far as to say that they are anarchists, I do think that much like anarchists today, you do get some that are rational, that are good, that are capable of providing good social analysis, so on and so forth. A lot of them are just very fucking misguided and very reactionary towards the system, rather than being able to think through things clearly. All they know is that the system is broken and that they hate what it has become. And in that sense, I can sort of identify with these villains. I feel like a lot of them are nuts, psycho, fucked up, but there's a kind
they're
of
just insurrectionary crime think readers. They probably, you know, they probably have white dreadlocks and are in a folk band.
They are all authors of the Anarchist Cookbook.
They read Rolling Thunder every day. They love riot porn.
So I think that the symbol of peace thing, I like it. I like not that it's being justified within My Hero Academia, but that it's so analyzable.
Yeah.
Is that a word? I don't even know if that's a word.
I don't know. Probably. It is now. yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Pretty interesting how, like, all of this, you know, power management stuff is just, like, so normal within the universe of the show that it's kind of in the background. Like, you have to kind of look for it to notice it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's one of the things that makes it such a successful show. One of the analysis videos I was watching spoke very much about how the whole show is very strongly tied to Western superheroes. And you can tell this through stuff. First of all, that a lot of the superhero powers are modeled after the powers you'll see with common superheroes in the West. And then, I mean, they've got stuff like Detroit Punch and
Delaware Smash. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, there's that. Then, and I can't get it out of my head. The one video spoke about All Might and his resemblance to Donald Trump.
A little bit, except the version of Donald Trump that Ben Garrison drew, with like the huge muscles and like the massive hog.
One of the things that they pointed out is that in anime, in Japanese anime, the moment that a character has blonde hair, they're generally from the West.
Yep.
That,
yep.
And so with All Might being this big blonde hero, you have to almost tie him back into the West. And right now, who's sitting at the top of the hierarchy? It's a guy without any hair. So because we can't draw that comparison, we have to go with Donald Trump.
And they kind of make, I mean, first of all, his hair is ridiculous in addition to being blonde. And then also he's got like the same like recessed eye socket look that Trump has.
Yeah.
Oh, like his eyes are always in shadow.
I'm squinting at absolutely everything. Like, I really wish someone would say to him, sir, we don't care about how it affects your optics, but you need to go see an optician?
Optometrist?
Optometrist, that's it.
They also kind of depict him as like a kind of a dumbass. When he's in his hero form, at least, you know?
Yeah. Like, he's able to think through stuff when he's not in hero form.
Yeah.
But the moment, like, he's constantly surprised by things that everyone around him does when he's a superhero. Like, oh my god, I got so much power to all my muscles that the blood flow is no longer getting to my head.
Yeah, one of the OVAs that I watched, there was a character who had a zombie virus power, and they're supposed to be doing this exercise, and like it starts to get out of hand, so All Might tries to intervene, and when he jumps in, he loses his like All Might form, so he reverts to like the skeleton guy, whatever, and he's like, oh shit, so like he's that fucking clumsy.
I actually want to read the manga. I want to see if it's anything like I want to see if they've adapted it for the anime, or whether they've stayed true to it.
I've seen a couple screens from it. It looks pretty similar. It's definitely well drawn. It's not like a One Punch Man webcomic or anything like that. So let's circle back to the sexist angle subversive or is it not? I think it is not. I believe this pretty firmly, especially after the OVA that I was watching right before we started. There was this moment where they're like rescuing people that have like fallen over a cliff, and what's her name? The girl with the creation power.
Can't remember her name now.
Yeah. Anyway, she's like pulling people up from the bottom of the ravine, and Mineta is like right behind her, and he's like basically like looking at her vag because she has that like bikini bottom costume. And they like the camera angle isn't like, it's not like, oh, look at what Mineta's doing. It's like, oh, look with Mineta at this 16-year-old girl's vag.
Jesus.
So, like, the camera angle is, like, head-on. So it's like, okay, sure, like, people are saying, wow, Mineta, you're such a scumbag, but, like, we're supposed to be looking at what he's looking at. Like, that's what you intentionally made it to be.
Exactly.
And then, like, almost all of the female heroes, I think all of them have like skin tight costumes, and like, you know, they're supposed to have like sexy bodies and stuff that we're supposed to be looking at, even though they're also like explicitly teenagers.
Exactly.
Which is pretty weird to me. And then like we mentioned earlier, like the female characters are fairly underdeveloped. The only ones that have any like much of any personality are like Tsuyu, who's actually I found out again through one of the OVAs. She's actually kind of a mom character, so like she's the way that she is because her parents travel for work a lot, so she has to take care of her younger siblings. So they show her like making dinner for them, and so like she's basically just a mom, and that's the reason why she acts more mature than some of the other people in the show.
Fair enough.
And she's actually my favorite female character, but it's like,
yeah,
Well, she's just cool because she's mature because she's a mom. It's like, okay.
And then I think the next big thing that sort of says that the feminism is not a subversion, that it's actually just misogyny, is the character of Mineta.
Yeah.
Which is highly fucking problematic.
Yeah, he's constantly like trying to
Jesus Christ,
grab at women and stuff, and like is just thinking about fucking women all the time.
Let's drill holes in the locker room walls.
Yeah, he's trying to peep at them. Yeah.
Yeah, and then in the one episode when they're doing their final exam, he actually outright states that his motivation for all of this is to get girls to like him. That's why he wants to become a superhero. And
well, at least he doesn't want to rape.
Like, oh my God, he wants them to want it. Great, buddy.
He's fine with being a regular sex criminal, but not a full on rapist. So,
I have to say, the one thing that isn't terrible about that character is that he's not depicted in the traditional toxic masculinity trope. He's not that right winger,
like boorish, muscly guy kind of thing. You mean?
At the end of the day, he's the geeky nerd that sits behind the computer watching anime all day.
Yeah.
And he just has this, he's been fed all of this imagery of these gorgeous superhero women dressed in almost nothing, flashing him constantly with every, and he's over-sexualized.
Yeah.
So whether that is a statement about society or whether it's just them playing on the trope again, is something that we probably could discuss, but rather than discuss it, I'm just going to go with they were lazy and they sort of just went with the trope.
Yeah, and I think another piece of evidence that it's more misogynistic than anything else is that all of the most powerful superheroes, all of them are men. Every single one. Like, it's not even fucking close. We see one fight with Uraraka, like the female main character, who's like probably going to be like Deku's love interest at some point. Kind of is already, I guess. But anyway, she's fighting against Bakugo, who's the number one or most powerful person in the class. And it seems like she's going to win. She like comes up with this really brilliant strategy against him. And he doesn't, he definitely does not see it coming. And then he just, like, swats her away like a fly, basically. Like, he just completely fucking dominates her. It's not even close.
Yeah, exactly. I think another interesting point is that one of the characters, Toru Hagakure, her superpower is that she's invisible. That's her quirk.
Yeah.
Literally, she cannot be seen. And the only way for her superpower to be really effective is for her to get naked.
Yeah.
So, like, when she's doing her final exam and she outsmarts the teacher and ends up winning at the exam, they actually have to draw attention to the fact that the teacher is looking at her, even though he can't see her. The teacher is looking at her, and she's embarrassed because she's naked.
Yeah.
So,
pretty fucked
up. As much as I love this show, they really fucked up on the feminism spectrum.
Yeah.
I think one of the most powerful characters in the show, from a female perspective, is probably Recovery Girl.
But then she's also just, she's like in the mom role again, you know?
Again with the mom role.
So, you're either a helpless little girl or a mom. Those are the two roles for females in the show.
Exactly. So, come on, My Hero Academia. I suppose you could say that Mountain Lady is pretty strong, but she's strong because she can grow to the size of a mountain.
Yeah, and then she's also kind of shown as like unfairly taking credit for a man's achievement. In the, like, that's the first thing that happens. Is like this male superhero is like about to beat this villain, and then she swoops in at the last second and takes all the credit, and it's like, whoa, that that's usually the other way around.
Whereas if you go look at One Punch Man, there's that psychic girl who's
Tornado.
Tornado, and she's got the temper tantrums and everything, and that's a little bit problematic. But at the end of the day, she's just as fucking powerful as One Punch Man himself.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, One Punch Man wins out for me. I've never watched One Piece, and I've never watched Naruto, so I don't know how they compare on this scale. But
One Piece is a little better because there are powerful female characters that can hold their own, but again, all of the most powerful characters are male. All the women are depicted as like having either being like old ladies, like completely undesirable old ladies, or being like sexy, scantily clad women with huge tits and tiny waists and big asses. So One Piece isn't really that great on women either. But
something
it lacks the fascist values of Hiroaka, so maybe it's a little bit better, but still.
I have to say, with Hiroaka, even on the villain side of things, you don't really have any particularly powerful woman.
Are there any female villains? I can't think of one.
Yeah. There's La Brava, but she hasn't been featured in the anime yet. Mm. There is Himiko Toga, who's like, she's depicted as like almost like a schoolgirl type of thing, and she's really fucking crazy.
Oh, like, yeah.
Nuts. That's right. So.
Yeah, she's like Harley Quinn, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, it's so much fun to be a bad guy.
Yeah. I love murdering people. Ha ha.
And so yeah, there's no strong female characters on the villain side either. So I don't know. I think
the reason for this, well, part of the reason for this, along with One Piece and Naruto, is that these are all shonen anime, so their target audience is boys. So they're not going to feature a whole lot of powerful females. But, I mean, even if they are targeting boys, they should feature some, you know?
Exactly.
It wouldn't be the end of the world.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
And then
I was also thinking in One Piece, they have not just one but two sex perverts. They're not quite as bad as Mineta. But like Sanji is like the typical like girl crazy like m'lady kind of guy, and then Brooke, who's like a skeleton, he's always asking to see women's panties. So,
oh my god, come on, Shonen.
yeah.
I'd like to touch on a part of the story that I found interesting, especially given a conversation that you and I were having the other day about power. Basically, it's a very short point. I want to look at how Deku's story is different from most shonen superheroes. Whether you're talking about Digimon or Naruto or One Piece, the shonen way tends to be for continuous growth and upping of power levels. But this isn't actually the case with Deku. Deku already has the power of One for All. Essentially, he's at max power levels. But in order to use his power, he has to learn control. Now, in the show, this is a metaphor for how the average person already has the capacity for greatness, but must learn to master their innate abilities in order to achieve that greatness. Deku's journey is all about control.
Fair enough.
Okay, so I just very quickly wanted to touch on how Deku's story differs from most shonen superhero stories. whether it's Digimon or Naruto or One Piece, the shonen way tends to be for continuous growth and upping of power levels. This, however, is not the case with Deku. Deku already has the power of One for All, essentially being at max power levels. But in order to use his power, he has to learn control. Now, this is a kind of metaphor for how the average person already has the capacity for greatness, but must learn to master their innate abilities in order to achieve that greatness. Deku's journey is all about control. So I think that Deku's journey being about control ties in once again with the fascism, monarchism, feudalism trend, because that's what fascism is about. It's about control, not just of yourself, but of others. And in this case, One for All, the power that Deku has, is about taking your innate power and using it for others. But if what he's learning is control of himself, then what he's also learning is control of others. By being at the top of his hierarchy, he essentially learns how to control all of society.
Yeah.
Would you agree with any of that?
To a degree, I mean, yeah, he does. Yeah, he definitely has, like, all of the power, you know, immediately. Yeah, I guess I would agree.
I mean, it's highlighted by the fact that his body can't handle the power that he has, and so he has to break a finger repeatedly until he's broken all his fingers.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess you're right about that. Yeah. Yeah, I have nothing else to add.
Okay. So, yeah, that's our take on My Hero Academia. We've covered pretty much... Dude, what are you doing?
Oh, vaping.
We were looking at vaping for me the other day, and I was just like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'd rather die of lung cancer.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, it went from being like, oh, wow, you're a vape bro. Like, fuck you, fucking loser, to like, now everyone just has one.
I went to the vape store, and the guy was saying to me that you can get the refill canister for this price. And I was like, okay, so how long does the refill canister like last? He's like, well, it depends on how much you vape. And I'm like, well, how long and how much do you vape? He's like, quite a bit. And I was like, okay, so how long does yours last? He's like, 3 days.
Damn.
I was like, well, at that price, I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to die of lung cancer, and I'm going to die of lung cancer happily.
Diane showed me the study or told me about the study recently that found that like people or like that vaping has made people more likely to smoke overall. Like people who never smoked would start vaping and then they would like be more likely to smoke cigarettes. And then people who try to use it as a substitute would often start smoking more.
Get so because frustrated they're vaping so by often. Not getting the fucking nicotine kick. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't smoke because I enjoy smoking. I smoke because I'm addicted to nicotine.
Yeah, I think it's also that they get more addicted to nicotine because they're dosing themselves with it so much more often. Because vaping is so easy and, like,
exactly.
Harmless. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not killing everyone with your secondhand smoke, but you're killing yourself much fucking quicker.
But I also wouldn't be surprised to hear that study was sponsored by tobacco companies or something like that.
Yeah, I know. Fair enough. Okay, so that was My Hero Academia. And you guys can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook or... we've got an Instagram page, but I haven't updated it past season one yet. It's basically just for all the cover art that I do for the show. So I can feel good about myself, like I do some stuff, rather than... like Ryan, who does all our audio editing, and he does most of the research for all the shows. Like, this is one of the rare occasions where I actually did some research too.
I think you actually did more research than I did. I just watched the anime and talked about it.
Yeah, I watched all the anime, and then I watched videos about the anime, and then I watched some videos that were about videos about the anime. And then I did an analysis, not just of the videos, but also of my watching of the anime. So I went all out on this one. Now I don't even know if I'm going to have the strength left to do the cover art. But anyway.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to just use something from Google Images. Just splash some text on it. So if you liked this one, we have two other anime ones so far, I think. And we will almost certainly be doing a One Piece episode with Reed, because he definitely wants to talk to us about One Piece. I don't know if you're into the idea of reading the manga or watching the anime, considering it's 800 episodes of the anime and like 7 or 8, I don't know, like 900 volumes of the manga or something like that. Reading it would probably be much easier.
I think in this case, what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to not do that. And then I'm just going to watch some YouTube videos about it that catches me up just enough that I'm able to participate in the conversation.
But it's really good. You should read, like, just read like a couple chapters of it and see if you like it. You might like it a lot.
Oh yeah. No. Obviously, I'll do my due diligence and familiarize myself with everything to a certain extent. But I'm not watching 800 episodes of something just so that we can do a podcast.
Well, you should read it anyway, because the animation fucking sucks. It's really bad. I don't know if you saw what I was. Yeah, I don't know if you saw what I was saying in the chat last night. The group DM. Did you see that?
I did, and I giggled to myself and then switched my phone off.
Yeah.
God, that group, man, that group.
Do you still have notifications on for
I'm
that?
Sitting trying to have. I've now gotten into the habit of switching the group on mute when my wife gets home.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise it totally interferes with my private time with my wife. Okay.
I just have it muted like all the time, and then I'll just go and check it when I feel like it, because otherwise it would just be like constant buzzing. Like I'm the type of person that gets extremely annoyed if I get too many notifications at once. Like if someone sends me like three messages in a row, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Type it in one message. But then I do the same shit all the time. So
I think the only time I get irritated is when I'm and this always happens to me. I'll have nothing to do, and I'm sitting around trying to figure out what should I do now. I'm kind of bored. And then something will come through, and I've suddenly got some work to do. And the moment I get started with the work, then suddenly I've got fucking three different people messaging me on WhatsApp. I've got people fucking messaging me on Facebook. I've got people fucking trying to call me, trying to sell me shit. I've got, like, literally, I get barraged all at once. And then the moment that I no longer have any work to do, then suddenly no one wants to talk to me. And I'm like, well, fuck all of you. I'm so sad. Fortunately, I've always got my wife on WhatsApp, so that's
okay. So that was the episode. If you liked it, follow us on Twitter at NeighborSciPod, patreon.com/neighborscience, facebook.com/neighborscience. I am at Handle of Rye on Twitter, without the E at the end. Oh, there's a kitty outside. He's cute. Follow Peter at BookCheekite, BOOKCHEEKITE. What else? Rate us on iTunes. I haven't checked because it just makes me mad.
Rate us on iTunes. I would really like some followers on Instagram for the Neighbor Science page, so you can check us out at Neighbor Science, one word.
Yeah.
And then I do intend in the coming week to put up the artwork for the season so far, because I've done some fantastically wonderful dank work, and I want recognition for that.
Oh, also go to the website that this is hosted on, postscarcitymagazine.com, and you can see the five volumes so far of Post-Scarcity Anarchism magazine, mostly written by me, but along with some other people. And then we also have links to the actual show notes that we use. So if any episode has interested you and you want to you know, read everything that we have and not just everything that we talked about in this show, which we often leave out quite a bit of stuff or, you know, don't include a lot of links that we were looking at as research. You can go on the postscarcitymagazine.com website and we have links to the show notes when available.
Yeah.
So I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's been a lot of fun. In the last week or so, we've been getting a little bit more attention on our Twitter feed,
yeah,
which has been good. Great. Thank you to all the listeners for starting to appreciate the hard work that we both put into putting out two tweets a week.
we need to start making some neighbor science podcast memes.
Yes.
Mike Dicta's really good at memeing their own podcasts.
Well,
I started trying to do this anime video of like a capitalist power versus Marxist fight, but goddamn, video editing is fucking hard, dude. Like when you don't know anything about it, especially. Yeah.
Yeah, I've just gotten Adobe Illustrator so that I can start learning that as well as Photoshop. And
did you just say Adobe?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you call it Adobe?
Yeah, I think everyone does.
I honestly couldn't give a fuck about how massive corporations like to call their shit. It doesn't bother me even in the slightest. If you want me to call it Adobe, I'll call
it. Yeah, but they didn't make up the word Adobe. That was already a word.
Yeah, I still don't give a fuck, though. Like, I come from a country where everyone calls it Adobe.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm gonna start calling it an Apple computer. it's actually pronounced Apple. I don't give a fuck what corporations want me to call their fucking computer. Okay.
It's an IBM. Okay, it's an IBM.
okay, we're gonna keep just going on forever if we don't end it now. I think
this is the right time to end it. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.